trade deadline coming up on Thursday. Are the Lakers going to make a move? We'll get into that. The team struggling shooting the basketball. We'll get into that one as well. The depth of the roster. LeBron James, an all-star. We're going to be taking your questions and comments too. Before we get too far into everything, please make sure you do hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Turn on those notifications as well. And don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts. I'm Trevor Lane, Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. Guys, how are we doing? I like your answer to the hat question.
My head's too big to wear hats. So I got to keep the flow going.
Yeah, I used to wear trucker hats on the show a lot, and I used to have to like literally link them by just the final two dots. And ever since I grew my hair out, it's literally I can only link on the final dot, and then it starts to go like that, you know? So it's like
I had people asking me, they go, you should go without the hat sometimes. I've just been in a hat phase for like 2 years now, where every day I'm just throwing a hat on. I don't know. One of these days I'll do a special show or something. I won't wear a hat for one. I don't have the same problem you guys do. I get to the last, I think, three spots that I can get to. But when my hair grows out, it does get a little bit more difficult to do that. All right. The Lakers fall to the Knicks last night. Frustrating loss, loss that we saw them get overwhelmed in the second half. And I think this spoke to a lot of the problems that we've seen over the course of the year for the Lakers, particularly when we talk about depth. Jovan, you and I were just talking about that before we came on the air here. I thought the depth of the Lakers compared to the depth of the Knicks was the biggest problem for LA last night.
I mean, we were just talking about it. We felt the Lakers stars outplayed the Knicks stars head to head. If you're comparing Luka and LeBron to Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns, I think the Lakers won the star matchup. But then you go to spots 3 through 9 in the rotation, and you could argue the Knicks won the head to head matchups at each spot. So last night, I mean, I feel like we didn't learn anything new. Like going into the road trip, when we were discussing this 8-game trip, I said I thought the Lakers were going to go 5-3, and the three losses I thought they were going to have were against the Clippers, the Cavs, and the Knicks, the three best teams they were going to play on the road trip. That has continued this trend. They're now 9-11 against teams above 500, which is the worst record among the top six in the West. Technically, Minnesota's 11-13, so they're percentage points ahead. But if you put those two teams to the side, you look at the top four in the West, all four of those teams are at least four games or better above 500 against above 500 teams. So that's a 6-game gap there that I think is indicative of where LA currently ranks against the top teams in the West. Like, those teams have just beaten better teams more consistently. They also have far fewer blowout losses and double-digit losses. So I mean, it just rinse and repeat with this group, right? Like, when they play a good team, they're probably going to lose. When they play an average to bad team, they're probably going to win. That's been the case for basically all of the season. And unfortunately, that's the reality that they're in unless they make a dramatic move or two going into the trade deadline.
And that basically screams your first, maybe second round exit, because that's what you're going to run into in the postseason, especially in the West. You know, you're going to see some of the better teams. They're going to be able to exploit the weaknesses that the Lakers have. And it kind of feels like this, you know, inevitability for this team as they're presently constructed, unless, again, they can, you know, find a little bit of magic ahead of Thursday. Jason, what did you think of the Lakers last night against the Knicks?
I'm with Jovan. It's been kind of a recurring trend. The Lakers are 5-10 this year against teams that are in the top 10 in point differential, according to Cleaning the Glass. That win percentage would rank 20th in the NBA. And, you know, I got a little sad as I was watching that game yesterday, because, like, I was thinking about how, because to your point, the Stars absolutely outplayed the Knicks Stars in that game. And I was thinking about, like, you know how hard it is to build a basketball team that has Luka, who lately has been playing at a level similar to the best players in the world and is certainly a top tier superstar in this league, and then all-star level talents in Austin and LeBron, to have that as your foundational set of talent and to legitimately have no real chance to win the championship. Like, it's legitimately hard to do. And what we keep seeing every single time they face these higher level teams around the NBA, we consistently see the same thing, which is a complete and total talent deficit down the roster. And, you know, there were some times early in the season at various points, various games here or there, where I thought the Stars didn't hold up their end of the bargain in some bigger games. That hasn't been the case for a while now. The Stars have been playing really well, and they've been doing their jobs. And what's ended up happening is the lack of talent down the roster has been the death sentence for them in these games. And I think, you know, when you turn on the Clippers game and you're seeing Kobe Sanders and Jordan Miller have success, you turn on the Warriors games and they're getting production out of these guys that they're finding on the margins. That's really the key, right? Because, like, there's agency politics. You're going to get certain levels of talent through your connections with Clutch over the years, obviously, namely Anthony Davis and LeBron James, right? You're going to have your big free agent signings that are very Lakers-y, right? Like, oh, you get a discounted signing on a guy like a Marcus Smart or a DeAndre Ayton, which in many ways is tangentially connected to you having Luka. Like, you probably aren't signing Ayton if you don't have Luka Doncic, right? Like, there's certain, like, higher-end talent plays that have kind of fallen in the Lakers' lap by virtue of their stars. But the truth of the matter is, when you look down their roster, they have done such a poor job over the course of the last 5 years of acquiring and accumulating talent on the margins that it's put them in a devastating talent deficit against the top teams in the league. And we are talking about a team, guys, that doesn't have a single player on the roster that can shoot and defend. If you look at their rotation, just strictly looking at who actually plays minutes for the Lakers, Rui Hachimura is the only player who's shooting over 38% from three. The only guy. And he's certainly not one of your defensively inclined players on the roster. And so, like, you know, more than anything having to do with the future of this team, there's such an extensive track record of a failure to accumulate this type of talent that it gives me nothing but a great deal of pessimism regarding the future and whether or not Rob Pelinka can eventually acquire this level of talent. And frankly, I think there's a ticking clock in there somewhere in the next year or two to where a guy like even Luka Doncic is going to look around and be like, am I in the right place? Am I playing basketball for the right team, for the right leadership? And I just was embarrassed watching the Lakers last night as I'm watching a Knicks team who's nothing but a second-tier contender. They are not Oklahoma City. They are not some of these teams at the top of the league that are decked out in top-end talent and middle-end talent and bottom-end talent. This is a second-tier contender in the Knicks, and they completely outclassed the Lakers in talent last night. Like, Landry Shamet was available for a veteran minimum contract. and it's just crazy to me that there is not a single player on this roster that can defend and shoot. That seems impossible in the year 2026 with how many talented basketball players there are on planet Earth. I just couldn't believe it as I was watching that game.
The fact that we're saying that in year 2026 is itself a big problem, because we've been saying that since 2022. We've been talking about how they need players who can defend and shoot, and they've not been able to find those kinds of pieces. And when they have found those kinds of pieces, they've not been able to retain those players. Now, we can talk about Max Christie went out in the Luka trade. Obviously, that's defensible. Jordan Goodwin, we can talk about the, you know, they essentially swapped him out for Marcus Smart, but was there a path to maybe keeping him? Certainly would have been helpful had they done that. But they've not been able to hang on to these kinds of players. And like you said, Jason, when you're looking at a game like this against the Knicks, it's very apparent that other teams are finding guys that are helping them. I mean, you're watching that game and thinking, man, the Lakers would kill for Landry Shamet right now. My God, could you imagine if the Lakers had a Josh Hart right now? Someone like that, and they just have not been able to get those guys. And I think the particularly disturbing part of all of this is Austin Reeves is making $14 million. Like, it's like you've got a superstar level quarterback on a rookie contract, right? It's that element of the NFL where, hey, now we've got a bunch of room to go spend, and we've got a guy who's ready to go. We can go spend. The Lakers, unfortunately, have taken the cap advantage that they've got by having Austin Reeves on this $14 million for this year, and he's not going to be that next year. And they've flushed it away on Vando and Gabe and Maxi and these other salaries that just aren't really giving you enough right now across this roster. So there's absolutely a roster construction problem here. There's been a failure to find young talent. And Jovan, I think this speaks to, as Jason's saying, maybe a larger concern, because this is the name of the game in the NBA moving forward. The teams that can identify talent, that can unearth diamonds in the rough. Hell, look at AJ Mitchell with the Thunder, right? Pieces like that, that seemingly come from out of nowhere and become a rotation level contributor are critical in today's NBA. And I feel like this Lakers team has like four, maybe five guys on the roster that probably shouldn't even be taking up roster spots right now.
I mean, let's for a moment entertain the possibility of the Lakers landing Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Sure.
This summer. Let's just say they're able to, let's even say they're able to keep Austin, right? Because there is a pathway, depending on how much cap space they could clear, they could take him into some measure of cap space and maybe send out a little bit of salary, but they could create a giant trade exception for Milwaukee. Let's just say that happens. Do you have confidence in them to build out the requisite two-way talent and depth around a potential Luka, Giannis, AR trio? Because I don't, right? Like that. Now they're going back to like the LeBron, AD, Russ model of you have to nail all of the minimum salary guys. Maybe you get a couple of exception players. You're going to, I mean, you would still have Jake under contract. You maybe have to figure out a way to try to flip Vando at some point, but you're going to have like a pretty limited rest of the roster in terms of your available salary slots, and you're going to have to nail the minimum guys. And I think there's a pathway for them to like get Giannis and still botch the process of building the roster around him and Luka, and just having this like, all right, you have this big three, you have all this top end talent, but the rest of the group is a bunch of one-way players who don't really fit together, as we've seen this roster have going on almost 5 years now. So that's like even the best case scenario, the most optimistic scenario of them somehow getting Giannis and building this juggernaut of Luka and Giannis together. I still have my concerns and reservations about if they could actually maximize those two as a duo, because we just saw them mismanage the end of LeBron and AD together and currently mismanage the beginning of LeBron and Luka together. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's where I'm at right now with how they've built the last few rosters, because they just cannot identify two-way talent. Like, that is a blind spot for them, and that is arguably the most important thing outside of nailing the top of the roster. Once you get beyond the stars, you need to be able to nail two-way talent, and they just have not been able to do that.
Yeah, and they've done a nice job.
Trevor, you had mentioned earlier, like, the contract stuff. Like, so LeBron's making this enormous salary this year, and Austin's making, you know, $13 million or $14 million, whatever it is. And it's like, okay, so let's say you convince LeBron to take a big discount next year. Like, you're just in the exact same position you're in this year, because Austin's going to get his raise. And so the Lakers have $75 million right now this season committed to players, and there's not a single one of them that can defend and shoot. Those are the non-LeBron, Austin, Luka. There's $75 million there, and none of them can defend and shoot. And like, the important thing that I think that Jovan's getting at, like, these kinds of guys are actually like quite abundant, not super talented, put the ball on the floor, score 17 point a game type of dudes, but dudes that can hit a catch and shoot three when they're open at, you know, somewhere between 38 and 42%, make simple reads based on advantage that are somewhere between 6'3 and 6'7, and that can move their feet and play a little bit of defense. They are out there. These guys, they're achievable at relatively reasonable contract numbers. We found several examples of them on veteran minimums around this league this year, between the Jordan Goodwins and the Jermichael Greens and all these different guys that are out there. They can be found in the draft. They can be, they're there, and there is no eye for that in the Lakers front office. There's no eye for that. And that really is the problem, is they just, whatever eye existed for that came in the form of the Bus Brothers, and they clearly lost all their influence in the last few years. And it just has been a problem. And I don't think you can have sustained success in the NBA unless you can find the AJ Mitchells or the Will Richards or the Kobe Sanders. You can't have sustained success in the NBA unless you're finding those guys. And the Lakers are just routinely not finding those guys.
I think it's worth noting, too, that we saw, look, Vando, Jake, Smart, they shot a combined 4 for 20 last night. That's even for guys who, you know, who can't shoot, right? And I think they would all kind of be to varying degrees in that category. They're guys that opposing teams are not going to worry about when they're back behind the three-point line. That is still an outlier poor shooting night. So some of this, I think, is getting magnified a bit by what was, I mean, there's no question they're below 30% from three. It was a bad shooting game on top of just, you saw the talent deficits. And I think that magnifies this whole situation for the Lakers. But Jovan, when you're talking about you don't see, you're concerned about the future. Even if you land Giannis, why would you have faith that they can do this? They did it. They did it in 2019-2020. They went and added all these pieces that made sense and fit.
Well, we're going back 6 years now, though.
But that's what I want to get to, though. We're talking about 6 years. As we're seeing this play out more and more, and we're seeing more and more of this kind of like, they are hitting the guys at the top. They're getting those stars, but the pieces around them are not quite right. It's almost an antiquated way of thinking and going about things, and that it's the stars that matter and the pieces around them don't so much, which is very much not today's NBA. Has this reframed the way that you look at what happened when they won the championship? Like, do you think some of that, I don't want to say accidental, was just good fortune there that they happened to put those pieces together rather than by design?
I mean, they'd had some of those guys in-house, right? Like JaVale McGee, KCP,
sure.
Caruso, Kuzma, and then, of course, executed the AD trade. But yeah, I mean, remember, they were trying to get Kawhi Leonard, and they were in the mix for Kawhi. And once he ended up going to the Clippers, they got Danny Green, who ended up being a big part of that title team. And had they landed Kawhi, I think that would have got, I mean, who knows what happens. I mean, theoretically, they still won the championship, but it would have obviously changed the makeup of that team. But even with how that roster was built, they were trying to go the three-star model and ended up, it just didn't work out, and they had to pivot, and I think actually pivot in a smart direction. But I mean, it's been so long that again, like that, I mean, what's funny is like, that's the ideal modern roster right now, I think, is that group. You could go with the two big look, you could go with the one big look, mm-hmm. you could play small, but even your small was pretty big. Like basically the entire rotation was 6'4 and above outside of Avery Bradley and Rondo, but Avery Bradley wasn't in the bubble. Rondo and Bradley, you know, kind of play like Bradley, elite point of attack defender. Rondo could play up a bit, you know, bigger than his size. AC was 6'4, could play up bigger than his size. So like, that was just a giant, long, athletic team. I think one of the best modern defenses we've seen. And then you also had two of, at a minimum, top five players in the league, if not arguably two of the top three players in the league right there next to Giannis. And you know, you could throw Kawhi in the mix. But I mean, that was the ideal version of a roster you want to build in the 2020s. They had it for a season. They tore part of it down to add more offensive-minded players. Then they really tore it all down to go get Russell Westbrook, and then they just have not been able to recover from that disaster of a trade. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it changes how I view things, because I think it's been clear that they have needed two-way players over the last few years, but it does continue to highlight the importance of it. We've also talked about the draft where you need those wings, and you go draft mm-hmm. Jalen Hood-Schifino, you go draft Dalton Connect, and you're prioritizing offensive guards in the draft when you have all this top end offensive talent. It's like, they've had some opportunities to try and get those types of guys, and they just have passed on them. So I think the goal moving forward needs to be try to acquire that type of player at the deadline, try to acquire that type of player in the summer, try to draft that player. If you're going to keep that 2026 pick, you better be drafting a two-way wing, and then you reshape the roster moving forward, because that's really the only way out of it. But the unfortunate part is it's probably going to be like two or three trade cycles.
Well, and that's certainly a challenge here, because as this question is noted in the super chat, which brings us to our next point, how much of Lucas Prime do we waste, and how long does Mark Walter wait before he realizes we need to move on from Rob in order to build a true contender? We're not sounding the alarm. It's not, uh-oh, the Lakers are going to lose Luka now or anything like that. But this is sooner rather than, I think it's sooner than most would expect that we're going to start having that conversation of, uh-oh, they're still not quite a contender if you don't add the right pieces. I think if you don't do anything at this trade deadline, it puts a lot of pressure on this summer to get it all right, because otherwise we get to next trade deadline and we're still in that same spot of, well, they kept the powder dry. Now we're looking ahead to, uh-oh, Luka can hit free agency. Is he going to want to stick around? They've got to figure this thing out a lot sooner than I think people think. The runway with Luka is not as long. It's not like they've got him till he's 33 or something like that. they need to get this sorted and do it quickly.
Yeah, I think like one of the things that's been really fascinating too is like these issues with talent on the back end of the roster are legitimately swinging games back and forth with their shooting. So they're shooting in the last 10 games, they're 5-5. Mm-hmm. They're shooting 33.5% from three in their losses, and they're shooting 42% in their wins. In their wins, they have a 107 defensive rating. In their losses, they have a 128 defensive rating. Now, obviously, there's some reality to, well, big shock, you make more shots when you win and you miss more shots when mm-hmm. you lose. But the point is like we're seeing a lot of games that follow a similar flow to what happened in the Knicks game last night. Like the shots miss and it like deflates the team. And then they start to miss defensive rotations and they start to miss box outs. And like you could really see it in that second half last night. The Lakers look straight up discouraged as they would move the ball through, generate an open look for somebody, and they'd fail to knock it down. And then they'd go to the other end and they'd kind of get a semi-contested three for somebody that would go in, but they'd be a better shooter, a shooter. Like, I'm sorry, guys, but OG Anunoby and Landry Shamet are good shooters. They're going to make them. And like, there's like the Knicks are the third best 3-point shooting team in the league. Like, that wasn't a shooting variance game. That was a shooting talent game that was on display last night in MSG. So I think like ultimately, like every team kind of has like a spectrum of play, what they're at when they're at their best, what they're like when they're at their worst. And a lot of things can swing that one way or another. It could be travel. It could be the schedule. It could be just like regular rhythm stuff that swings back and forth. For the Lakers, it's shot making. When they're making shots, it invigorates them. They play better on defense. They rebound harder. They run the floor better. When they're missing shots, it deflates them, and they start to show the worst side of themselves on that end of the floor. And I think like that's one of the biggest reasons why I think this team would actually gain more from a talent upgrade than you would think on paper, is just simply that dynamic. You bring in one or two guys before the start of next training camp that can like really defend and shoot, it's going to just lead to more sequences where the Lakers are at their best. And so that's one of the big reasons why that's so important. And I just am feeling like there was a complete a missed opportunity on the margins over the last 5 years that's really starting to come to roost for these Lakers.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. It's not one thing. It's not, oh, it's LeBron's fault. It's not, oh, it's, you know, they made this trade or that trade. It's a lot of things that have added up. We can talk about, you know, Jovan talked about missing on some of their signings, like Gabe Vincent, Kendrick Nunn, Lonnie Walker, you know, those types of additions, targeting guys in the draft that are kind of
small offensive-minded guards.
Yeah, connect and you know, and all that guys. It's just not.
They're trying to build a team with 10 Gabe Vincents.
Didn't JJ say he wished he had 10 Gabe Vincents or something like that? Oh my goodness. Oh, Gabe. So what? All of this is very doom and gloom, very very negative. You know, what do they do? What's the path out? How do you get through this jungle that they're stuck in and cut through it to the promised land?
It's tough. I want to be clear here. Like, I'm not saying it's an easy task ahead, right?
Sure.
Like, but that's also why the people who are in the positions of power have those jobs. It's a difficult situation that you have to navigate and come out on the other side. I think I made this point. I think it was last week that I have a couple goals for the Lakers at the trade deadline. Like, one would be at a minimum upgrading that Gabe Vincent, Maxi Kleber spot in the rotation. And it seems like they don't want to take on longer term money to upgrade that spot. So maybe there is some player that's better than Gabe Vincent that you could get by attaching Dalton and or a second round pick. And if you could have some form of Gabe plus Dalton plus a second, Maxi plus Dalton plus a second, can you upgrade the rotation at a minimum? Like, I think that's like the bare minimum that they have to do. Longer term and bigger picture, my goal would be finding a starter at the deadline, whether that's a Nick Claxton, a Herb Jones, someone of that ilk. And that almost certainly requires a first round draft pick. And if you could do that, then I think you've had a successful deadline, even if it ultimately nets out as like a slightly better team. I think long term, if you have now Nick Claxton, Austin Reeves, and Luka Doncic plugged in as three of your five starters, or Herb Jones with AR and Luka, three of your five starters. Now you have a stronger foundation moving forward. So I think it's got to be one of two things, of either marginally upgrading this year's group with the limited assets you have to trade, or making a bigger move for the future. But the option I did not mention is standing pat and doing absolutely nothing, or like trading. I mean, I guess maybe you could get something for like Dalton in a second, but I feel like you got to put something on the table at least to upgrade either this year's group marginally, or like big picture upgrade the starters. But if they don't do either of those things, then again, they're putting a lot of pressure on nailing next summer. And they have had three relatively quiet summers going on the last three off seasons. So it would be bucking a recent trend of not really doing much over the off season.
If they decide they're hellbent on cap space for this summer, what do you do with Rui Hachimura? Because he's one guy, he's an expiring contract, but he also has value. What do you do with him? If you say we want $57 million to play with over the summer, like there's a chance he expires and then walks away over the summer and you lose him for nothing. Do you risk that? Or do you move him?
It depends. I mean, I think it's hard to say in a vacuum what to do with that, but I mean, I would try to move him for a longer, like, you know, theoretically he's in a Claxton or Herb Jones trade, and you're taking a slight step back in a way because you're losing your best shooter, and you are swapping, you're not upgrading the rotation in the sense of adding an extra rotation player or upgrading the Gabe spot necessarily. It would depend on the context of the trade, or maybe you do a second move as well. But I do think if you could flip him for one of the future guys, I would be open to that. Otherwise, I think you stand pat with Rui, and then, I mean, maybe they end up re-signing him and flipping him in the future. That's going to ultimately come down to what their options are over the summer. But yeah, I mean, look, we've seen them. I mean, go back to Mo Bamba and Malik Beasley. They let those guys walk and did not maximize that. They have done this before in terms of letting expiring money expire and not capitalizing on it. So that would be in line with how they've operated before.
Yeah, they've allowed it to wilt on the vine. All right, we do need to talk about LeBron making the All-Star
team. Can I hit one last quick thing on this game? Just really quickly on the shooting. This kind of stood out to me in the Knicks game. I just wanted to hit this briefly before we moved on. LeBron and Rui, I think both need to adjust their perspective of what counts as a good catch and shoot look for them. LeBron was the main culprit last night, but there were a couple with Rui as well. And it's something I've seen with Rui, like, kind of over the last few years, but like, they're big dudes. They're 6'9", and they both have pretty high release points, and they're two of the best catch and shoot players on the team. I know LeBron's shooting poorly on catch and shoots this year, but he's barely taken them. He's only taken three of them a game, and he was well over 40% each of the last two seasons on catch and shoot threes. And I think for a team that can't shoot, if they get a decent look, like even against a closeout for LeBron or Rui, they got to take it. And there's just been too many opportunities where Rui or LeBron passes on a three and it ends up being a Jake LaRavia three, or it ends up being a Vando three, or it ends up being a kind of a hand grenade. Like, how many hand grenades got thrown to Luka last night with like 3 seconds on the shot clock? And like, just from a process standpoint, I'd like to see LeBron and Rui in particular just kind of tweak what they consider to be a good catch and shoot look more towards shooting it, just simply because this team doesn't have the catch and shoot talent for those dudes to pass on decent catch and shoot looks.
And what's interesting, you mentioned the ball gets swung to like Jake LaRavia, and his numbers are backwards when you look at what it should be. Typically, a catch and shoot should be a higher percentage look than off the dribble, but he's actually, I was looking at this last night, he's in the low 40% when it comes to off the dribble, but low 30% when it comes to catch and shoot looks. So it's a decisively big drop when you do pass up a Rui Hachimura catch and shoot, even if it is semi-contested, and turn it into right now a Jake LaRavia catch and shoot opportunity. Those are just not going down at the same rate. You mentioned LeBron. LeBron does wind up making an All-Star team after all. Jovan and I both had him making it. Jovan was a little bit more clever with how he got LeBron onto the All-Star team. He had him coming in as a designation from Adam Silver, but LeBron does make it. Jason, let's start with you. What did you think about LeBron making the All-Star team? Is that the way that it should have gone? And how do things go, you know, from here for the rest of the roster?
I don't know how the Kawhi snub and the LeBron All-Star selection got connected to each other. I think it's hilarious because, like, I would argue Kawhi, first of all, Kawhi is a horrible snub. It's one of the worst snubs in the history of the league. He, frankly, has been one of the top six or seven players in the entire NBA this year. If there's a debate, it's whether or not he should be first team All-NBA. or second team All NBA, not whether or not he should be an All Star. Kawhi's just been unbelievable. He's been at like 30 points per game, well over 60% true shooting in this Clippers stretch where they've been 17-4 or whatever their record's been over the last 21 games. I have no idea why that got connected to LeBron. Like, to me, with Kawhi, he's clearly been better than Jamal Murray. He's clearly been better than Chet Holmgren. He's clearly been better than Devin Booker. He's clearly been better than Denny Avdia. That should have been where the debate lied. The bottom line is that consistently throughout NBA history, when an all-time great player is at the tail end of his career and he's healthy and able to play in the All-Star game, he gets in the All-Star game. Michael Jordan, his last two seasons with Washington, wasn't as good as LeBron is now. He was in the All-Star game. Kobe Bryant made three All-Star games after tearing his Achilles. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar made two All-Star games at the tail end of his career, averaging less than 15 points per game. Larry Bird had a couple of years where at the end of his career where he missed a bunch of games and still got into the All-Star game. Like, this is just what LeBron is still one of the faces of the league, and still, like, he threw down like six highlight dunks over the last week. The dude's been averaging 24-6-6 for basically 2 months on 61% true shooting for a team that's 29-19. In what universe would you take the same honor that has been bestowed on every all-time great in the history of the NBA and snatch it away from LeBron in this particular situation? Like, frankly, like, Kawhi should have been an All-Star. They should have found a way to get him on a roster. I hope they still do. I hope he gets the first whatever health scratch that takes place over the next week or so. But, like, the idea that people can't wrap their brains around the fact that LeBron James is an All-Star, like, blows my mind. You got to get your hate out of your heart, man. It's not good for you. You're not going to live a happy life when you think that way. And frankly, like, if you don't want to see LeBron in the All-Star game, like, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, he's like the perfect guy to have in that game because he leaks out and throws down dunks. So frankly, I didn't understand any of the pushback. I thought the Kawhi snub was separate from the LeBron thing, and people just need to learn their NBA history if they can't figure out why he's on the team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jason. And this is, and in what universe? In this universe, because you've got a group of people that are running around and everything LeBron does, they're going to try to spin negative. You've got a group of people that everything LeBron does, they're going to try to spin positive. That's where all of that is coming from, and because it generates interest when it's LeBron related. But is there a sense of reality to it? Is there a sense of objectivity to it? Is there a sense of truth to it? No, absolutely not. Because you're right, over NBA history, we've seen all-time greats get this honor, especially if there's a guy, you could call him the greatest of all time. You could, at the very least, he's in the conversation. He's going to get that kind of an honor if there's a feeling that this could really be his last year. And I think that is the case here with LeBron James. It could, we don't know for sure, but it could wind up being his last year. So, of course, he's going to wind up making it to the All-Star team. So I'm not surprised. I'm also not surprised, though, at the number of people that are running around saying that, oh, he shouldn't have made it and all this. And he's been bad. And if you think he's been bad, well, you haven't been watching the Lakers play over the last, 6 weeks or so. All you saw was him the very first few games that he came back. And even then, he wasn't really all that bad. So it's a lot of just kind of the hater culture, I think, around that that's creating the outcry over LeBron James making it to the All-Star team. Jovan, we weren't surprised that he made it. You and I both had him making it. But what happens now? Because there's going to be at least an injury replacement for Giannis, and there's a little bit of flexibility here in terms of the international spots versus USA spots on the roster. How does Adam Silver handle that situation?
I wonder if it has to be a like for like in terms of if an international player is out, you have to replace them, or if an American player is out, you have to replace them with an American player. Because I think if Giannis is out, which he's going to be out, Kawhi should be the replacement. Now, if we're going international, I think it should be Alperen Şengün, but then that's also a West player replacing potentially an East player. So this is where we also get into, like, they've changed the All-Star format multiple times over the last few years. And it was fun, I guess, at first with the drafts and, mm-hmm. and the players picking it. And it was like, who's going to go last and who has beef with who? And you had like the Giannis Harden beef going on and whatnot. But now it's like, if you're going to do it this way, you should almost just have 16 American players, 8 international players, and have the voting be that way. Because especially looking at the bottom of the East, like, the bottom of the West was tough. That there was several, I mean, we're talking Kawhi, Şengün, like, there's several other guys you can mention that were snubbed or should have been in stronger consideration. But you go to the East and you're like struggling to get to 12 All-Stars in the East. and looking at spots like 9 through 12, you can make a case, you know, four West players should be in there over the bottom of the East. So for going with the 16 and 8, I think you just do 16 American players, 8 international players. But yeah, it seems like Giannis is going to be replaced now, whether that's an American player. What I mean, Towns is sort of the wild card here in terms of
and Powell,
where they you qualify. Are they international or are they American? But yeah, I mean, I if they're international, then I guess it ends up potentially being an American player, which was when I had LeBron being added on my list. I had 9 international guys, 15 American guys. So they needed a 16th. Then LeBron ended up making it in my version. But yeah, I mean, there'll probably be another player or two that ends up missing. So there'll be more replacements. I assume there'll be 2 or 3, but I don't quite know how they're going to suss that out.
I think Adam Silver needs to do what he can within the confines of the system to make sure East or West, it doesn't matter. It should be whoever is the most deserving makes it. And if that means you have to push a Karl Anthony Towns onto the international team and then go and bring in an American player, that's how Kawhi gets on or whatever. The end result needs to be the best players, whether they're an international player, an American player, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, use whatever flexibility is available to make sure that all of that goes away. Who are the best players, and then slot players accordingly in order to get the best players involved into the All-Star game. We'll see. And then that may be a difficult thing to do, but I think given that there is that extra flexibility this year, because he can add players, if there's not enough internationals, there's not enough American players, use as much flexibility as possible to try to make things right and get the guys who deserve to be All-Stars into that spot. Speaking of which, Austin Reeves has been hurt, did not play last night against the Knicks, warmed up. There was this optimism. Okay, maybe here we go. Nope. Only one opportunity left to play on the road trip, and that's against the Brooklyn Nets. But had Austin not gotten hurt, is Austin an All-Star? Do the Lakers have 3 All-Stars, or do you think he misses the cut?
I think that if Austin continues to stay healthy and plays, the league still just finds a way to get LeBron in there. I think Austin's injury kind of made it easier for the league to get LeBron in there. But there's just, again, there's no universe where LeBron is averaging, you know, 26-6 or 21-6-6 or whatever on 60% true shooting and misses the All-Star game. There's literally no universe. Now, Austin was playing at an All-Star level. So, like, I think there's another version of this too, where if Austin's healthy, the Lakers very well could be the 4 seed right now. And, mm-hmm. you know, and look a little, they could be 2 or 3 wins better. They might even pass Denver with Jokic being out for as long as he was. Not to say that the Lakers weren't still flawed, but just with Austin available for all those games, do they pull 2 or 3 of them out? Maybe, you know what I mean? So like maybe they're the 3 seed and then the league has an easier excuse to put all 3 of them in. But the bottom line, there was no universe. I don't care if Kawhi would have played in every single game and the Clippers were the 2 seed and they would have just kicked somebody else out. Like LeBron was going to be an All-Star under any circumstances, just because that's how the league has worked ever since its inception, the damn near a century ago. So I was literally mind blown as I was watching yesterday. People like struggle to come to terms with that. I'm like, of all the names on that list, like that's the one that pisses you off. But never mind the fact that Deddy Avdija, Pascal Siakam, and Jalen Johnson are playing on shit teams and they're in the All-Star game. Like LeBron has flat out been better than Jalen Johnson this year. Jalen's been really bad on the defensive end of the floor and can't self-create. Like Jalen's put up big numbers, but LeBron's been better than it's just of all of the dudes. That's the guy. Like, it's just like, it's like you're telling on yourself. Like if you got mad that LeBron was selected, you're straight up telling on yourself.
It's like I said, it's the people running around saying, oh, LeBron makes the Lakers worse. It's his salary, blah, blah, even though I've explained so many times what the salary would have actually meant last season. He'd taken any kind of a pay cut, wouldn't have really changed all that much about the roster. It's all of that. And I'm not surprised. It's LeBron. LeBron could run into a burning building and save a litter of puppies, and it wouldn't. And there are people that would try to spin that negative. That's just the reality of the world that we live in. It's unfortunate. It sucks. It's a shitty way to watch basketball and to follow the sport. But there are people who that's the way that they want to see things. They just want to go negative on every single thing that they see for a certain player or person or whatever. All right. Let's get into the chat. Maybe it's a dangerous place to go now.
It's a little dangerous right now.
It's a little dangerous. But we're going to get into your chat questions and comments. We first got to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Sleeper. We'll be right back to get to your questions, your comments for the remainder of the show.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using the code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right. Thank you to Sleeper for sponsoring the show today. We appreciate them. I guess we'll start with one of the comments that came in before the show started. Was that Jovan Buha or Jovan Bravo? Last show.
Hair's getting a little long. A little voluminous.
Christopher said, bigger reason for bad third quarters, lack of effort or opponents' halftime adjustments. Also added in, not Lakers related, but could the Hornets pull off an upset in the first round? Let's talk about it. Jason, let's start with the third quarter thing for the Lakers. Is that a lack of adjustments on the Lakers' part? Is that bad effort? Is that the opponents making adjustments? Is there like a one, you know, cure all type of thing that we can point to third quarter struggles?
You know, I would go the other way just simply because the Lakers have actually been a team that typically in the third quarter this season have really ratcheted things up, especially in the second halves of third quarters. They had their starting lineup issues at the beginning of the year. We don't need to trigger Jovan, but they had their starting lineup issues early. But they were a good like tail end of the third quarter type of team. I think it's been a combination of a couple factors. One, the road trip, just being a little worn down from going every other night. LeBron and Luka in particular have had enormous workloads over the last couple of weeks under the circumstances with Austin being out. And then just similarly, like there's been this dynamic where if the Lakers are unable to sustain their shooting, their defense tends to trend down as the game progresses and the opponent seems to figure out that they can generate quality shots against them. And it just kind of is like the dam breaking, so to speak. But again, like I think we've seen plenty of examples throughout the season where the Lakers have been a pretty good second half team. So I don't want to overreact to a short term trend.
I think that's historically we've seen them struggle in third quarters. And so there's a little bit of that PTSD that's built in there. I do agree. It's been a week or so since I pulled the stats, but it's been the first quarters, Jovan, that's been the bigger problem. They were like a net negative -7 in first quarters. In the third, I think they were a net like negative -1 and change or something. And nothing, not good, but nothing near what we've seen in first quarters. But the Lakers have this long history of struggling in third quarters that it leads to that sort of idea perpetuating.
And I would say on this road trip, it's been a bit of a concern. I think about the Clippers game, like they ended up,
it was
a tale of two halves of the quarter where they had a disastrous first 6 minutes of the quarter and then an incredible final 6 minutes of the quarter. I think about the Cleveland game. That's where that game spiraled. Obviously, last night they give up almost 40 points in the third. So it's been more of an issue lately. I do think it had been better before that. And to Jason's point, they have had a lot of these runs starting in like the final 3-4 minutes of the third that carry into the beginning of the fourth, and like that 6 to 7 minute period of like end of third into early fourth has actually been a really good stretch for them. But I also think about like the Dallas game. That's where that game got out of control. So the third quarter has been really problematic for them lately on this trip. But I don't know what this team just sometimes comes out with no motor. I don't know if it's any more complicated than that, but they just go through the motions and their back has to really be against the wall for them to play with urgency. And I think sometimes that's what we see. Like they just devolve into just going through the motions. And when they play like that, you see what happens.
All right, it's gotten much worse since last I pulled the stats. They now rank 23rd in the NBA in net rating in third quarters, and they're a minus 4.9. So that's
bad.
The Cavs game probably had quite a bit to do with that. Those numbers, not good. Yeah, I mean, there was a point last year it was really bad, to the point where we were talking about Do you even let the guys go? I mean, joking, but do you even let the guys go into the locker room? Do you just have them stay out there? Bring out orange slices and water bottles or whatever and make them sit on the bench out there. Don't, whatever it is, they go into the locker room. I don't know if they just go in there and take tequila shots or what, but they come out and they are they're not sharp for second half. So I think there's something to third quarters need to get better. But I also think there is a little bit, and you guys could speak to this, but there's a little bit of a reliance on, okay, we're going to have a strong finishing kick and we're going to be really, and they have been good in fourth quarters, but it's almost like they feel like they can just turn it on in the fourth quarters of games. And they're not good enough to do that. They've gotten away with it a few times, but they're not good enough for that. It feels like they're kind of waiting to finally sprint through the finish line. And they think that's going to carry them through.
To your point, it's been mostly the bad teams that method has worked against. Like this, the Lakers, you want to know why the Lakers have such a bad net rating? It's because they get blown out by the good teams and they barely beat the bad teams. And one of the ways they barely beat the bad teams is they mess around for 2.5 quarters and they turn it up in their, you know, solo Luka shift, solo LeBron shift, solo Luka shift, and then they close it to tail the fourth. Like that's usually how they've been doing it. And so, yeah, like to your point, it just, that sort of thing can work when you've got, you know, like for instance, like I think one of the switch flipping teams that I actually think has done a pretty good job this year is Minnesota. But the difference is their like fastball is every bit as fast as the best teams in the NBA. And so they can get away with a lot of that kind of stuff. And even then they have a positive net rating in first half. So they're not like digging themselves in substantial holes either. So like, I think really the issue is that the Lakers are trying to be a switch flipping team with their switch kind of like not going up all the way, if that makes sense.
Exactly. To the final part of this question, saying not Lakers related, but could the Hornets pull off an upset in the first round? The Hornets obviously have been, I mean, they're on a 6-game win streak. They've been playing great. Their offense is so explosive, as the Lakers learned when they played against them. But I would say no, I don't see them pulling off an upset in the first round. Unless, if we were talking about the Hornets could somehow get up to, and they're not going to, but get up to the 5 seed, they're too far back. They're right now the 11th seed in the East. And then they can draw the Raptors in the first round. Okay, maybe, you know, maybe they could get an upset there. But realistically, this is a team that's going to be battling through the play-in. You emerge from the play-in and you're talking about the Pistons or the Knicks in round one. No, I don't see them upsetting either one of those teams.
We every year in the middle of the season see a natural kind of set of weirdness come around between all the teams that came out hot out the gates start to kind of settle into the 82-game grind. Injuries start to play. Well, like this, when you get into December, January, effort and energy determine most of the games. And we see every year a team like the Hornets that gets like really healthy. Like the Hornets are really healthy right now. They get like really healthy and they just start piling away wins because they start playing some good basketball. I would be stunned if the Hornets won a first round series.
All right, let's go here. Ryan says LA's not making moves, guys. It's Giannis in the summer or bust. Then if that's the case, if you say we're waiting for Giannis, then you better land Giannis, right? Which is, I mean, even if you stack up 3 first round picks, that's not a whole heck of a lot compared to what some of these other teams. I think other teams could beat that offer, even if you do stack up all 3 of those picks, throw in pick swaps, stuff like that. I think you would need Giannis to say, I want to be a Laker and nothing else. And that I just don't see that happening. So if that's going to be it, if we're going to keep the powder dry in order to go try to get Giannis this summer, first of all, you better pray he doesn't get moved by Thursday. Got to hope that he doesn't get traded by then. But if that's going to be the plan, then you can't miss. Because if you go for Giannis this summer and you miss, you may be in a really tough position from there.
I agree. Yeah.
All right, let's go.
That's the upside of ideally you make a move now, a move in the summer, and you build the roster that way. If you don't make the move now, you better make a couple moves in the summer.
Before we get to, do you, Jason, like a Giannis and Luka pairing?
I think that I'm a big believer in don't overthink it. Like you're not trading for Russell Westbrook. You're trading for a player that does a hell of a lot more good than bad. I don't think it's as natural of a fit as some people think, because I think they'll face more switching than you would think. And I don't think either player does a fantastic job of spacing for the other. I think the bigger issue is the stuff you guys talked about. This team is so devoid of two-way talent and so bad at scouting that like you put Giannis with Luka, who's going to be the person that accumulates the two-way talent they need to win? Like I think that I've been big on this idea of sustainability as of late, especially when you've got a young star, when you've got a star that's in their mid-20s, you've got to figure out a way to sustain. So like, take Minnesota, for example, and I think they're an even more dramatic example of this because they actually do have some talent. Like, Minnesota could make a move for Giannis and still be good in the short term and not be, like, struggling to build the remainder of their roster. But, like, Jaden McDaniels in this four-game winning streak is shooting over 60% from three. That kid is still getting better and better every single year. He is your ticket to sustainability. He's your ticket to keeping Ant 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. If you trade Jaden McDaniels for Giannis, you're trading Anthony Edwards in 3 or 4 years. Like, that's the problem. And so, like, if you're the Lakers, your best pathway to sustainability is finding really good players that are in their mid-20s. It can't be targeting that classic superstar type of move. Like, I personally am just not a big – I think you got to be a certain amount of desperate to go after Giannis. That's why teams like Miami and Golden State make sense. Like, they if they trade for Giannis and then Giannis gets a calf strain and misses the postseason – how are they any worse off than they are right now? You know what I mean? Like, that's really the thing. But, like, the Lakers have Luka Doncic at age 26. They have real potential for sustainability here if they make some savvy decisions in the coming years. So I think they need to be very careful.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed, because you could wind up with a roster that has top-end talent, no depth, and this is an NBA where depth is very much needed. It's been the way that things have been going in this league for a number of years now. February could be disastrous, MCHA says. Potential to go 4-7, 3-8. With the Lakers being a play-in team, mean failure. Austin Reeves is needed back as soon as possible. I think part of it is the depth of the West. Like, you could win 50 games this year and be a play-in team in the West, which is, you know, 50 games last year got you to the 3 seed. Now, that, you know, it helped that you had tiebreakers over a number of teams, but still, that's part of it is the depth of the West. And I think it's important that we frame the conversation with that. But to me, being in the play-in with bottom line, being in the play-in with Luka, LeBron, and Austin playing at this level would have to be a failure.
I agree. And I'm going to depress you guys right now.
Oh, no.
Because I'm a proponent of what have you done for me lately, right? So we're far removed from LA's 15-4 start, and that has been the difference in their record right now. They're being carried by those first 19 games. And of course, every game matters the same in theory, but they are 14-15 since December 1st, which is 10th in the Western Conference. Like, Jason was hitting on, you know, sometimes teams will go through these funks in the middle of the season and there's some wonky results, and that's certainly true to a degree. But, you know, San Antonio, first in the West, third overall over that span. OKC second. The Clippers are third. Minnesota's fourth. Denver's fifth. So, like, the other top teams that we're talking about in the West that are the biggest threats or competitors with the Lakers, they've all been pretty good over the past couple of months. The Lakers have been below 500 and right now would barely be making the play-in if we were just judging the last couple of months. So they've been trending in the wrong direction for a couple of months here. Now, Austin has missed a lot of games. That has been a part of this. I think if Austin was available, they have a better record. Like, they're at least above 500. And I don't know how many games that swings, but I think it swings at least a couple, if not a few. But yeah, I mean, Austin is needed back as soon as possible because this current group we've seen for the last couple of months, they're struggling to play 500 basketball. And to your point, February is a pretty tough month. They are home a lot, at least. They have an 8-game homestand going into the All-Star break and then coming out of the All-Star break. But yeah, I mean, they're just basically been a 500 team for 2 months. And I think, like, at some point we have to stop thinking about what they did in October, November, and start thinking about what they've been for going on over 2 months.
Agreed, especially when the quality of teams is only going to go up. If you look at the closing stretch too, March and into April, boy,
it's brutal.
There's some tough ones. Why don't we see more LeBron and Luka ball screen actions when the offense is stuck? I understand the shooting woes, but dang, that two-man action needs work. Jason, how much of that is just, it just automatically creates that it's an auto switch because the players that are going to be defending LeBron and Luka?
Yeah, that's a really good. I mean, the only time you'll really see the Lakers go to that action is if they really like one of the players as a post-up matchup for LeBron. Mm-hmm. Then they'll kind of target it that way. But, like, I think generally speaking, the Lakers offense has had a lot of good process as of late. It hasn't been a process thing for me. It's been more of a results. Like, I don't want to sit here and pretend like it's perfect. Like, they've had turnover issues. Like Luka got a little bit of that last night. He hit that huge spin move ISO three, and then he had back-to-back turnovers that led to runouts, and it was like bang, bang, and it just felt like a shot to the chest. You know, like, it hadn't been perfect. They've had their ups and downs, but for the most part, their offensive organization I've been generally pleased with.
All right, let's go here. Marley said, might be alone on this, but Rob shouldn't trade for Giannis. We'd most likely have to give up all of our assets, leaving us to rely on signing buyout guys. Now, I don't think it's anywhere near realistic for the Lakers to trade for Giannis now at the trade deadline, where then you'd be looking at the buyout market. I think it would be more of a summertime thing if, and again, I don't think it's likely, but if they were to trade for Giannis, it would have to be this summer when they have three draft picks available to potentially put into that kind of a deal. And then you're hoping to make some moves from there. If you use your cap space in order to bring in Giannis in a trade, then you go and use your room exception to add some players, right? To add a player, maybe two, if you could split it up. Then you're adding veteran minimum signings from there, if there's any other kind of trades that you could do, things of that nature. So I don't think this would be a situation where the Lakers give up like four or five players right now to go get Giannis, and then you're hoping that some players pop free on the buyout market by the end of February. I think we're talking about a summertime. I just don't see any way the Lakers can get Giannis right now.
No, this is a summertime move, if not potentially even into 2026-27 season. I mean, we talked about it earlier. Like, if they land Giannis, there's a lot of pressure to nail the rest of the roster, and there has been an inability to do that. A lot of the vet minimum signings, I think, have not panned out for this group. Certainly been some hits. I think about Malik Monk. I think about more recently Jackson Hayes, getting Jordan Goodwin originally on a two-way. Like, they have had some hits, but they've also had a lot of misses. And the two problem spots have been all of the non-AD centers and all of the two-way wings, and just, you know, players above like 6'5". They've not really been able to hit on those player archetypes, which are very valuable in 2026 and beyond. So I'm open to Giannis. I'm not like fully all in on like they have to trade for Giannis even if he is available. I think that there's a lot of context that goes into it. I also want to know what the alternatives are. Like, if one path is trade for Giannis, one path is basically run it back and like hope to make a move at the 2027 deadline, I would err on the side of trading for Giannis. But there's just also a lot of uncertainty with how they actually can build a roster, because you have to nail your back end roster, and you have to uncover a Jalen Tyson, or you have to uncover a Spencer Jones and or a Tyler Kolek, or, you know, guys like that, and they just have not done that consistently over the last few years.
Exactly. And when they have found a guy, they've not been able to retain that player.
Or that.
We've seen that happen too. Even when they found, like, you know, Jordan Goodwin being the example, or Max Christie, you know, DFS, obviously he's not played well this year, but even going back, even like Malik Monk was a find on a veteran minimum, but you knew if he hit, you were probably going to lose him. And that's exactly what happened.
Can I read you a quick stat? Jordan Goodwin per 36 minutes, 2.5 made threes per game, 2.5 steals per game, and 2.5 made threes per 36 minutes, 2.5 steals per 36 minutes, and 8 rebounds per 36 minutes. You know, there have been a couple of things with the Rob Pelinka experience where, like, it's not retroactive. Like, we can look at, like, for instance, when we criticize Gabe Vincent, you know, like, Gabe Vincent was coming off of a finals team. I remember in the moment being like, oh, I think they're looking for like an off ball version of Dennis Schroeder, who's a more committed catch and shoot player. Cause Dennis had those moments in the Sun series where he just didn't want to shoot. If you remember, like, the point is we're Monday morning quarterbacking some of that stuff.
Sure.
The Jordan Goodwin thing, the Alex Caruso thing, the Russell Westbrook trade, these are all things where, like, in the moment, we're like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Like, this is ridiculous. We all knew Jordan Goodwin was good. We all knew he was exactly something that the Lakers needed, and they let him walk. It's like asinine to me.
Yovan, what do you think the cost was? And have you heard anything to move to? Because the solution to not losing Jordan Goodwin would have been attaching something to Gabe or Maxey, getting a team to take them into cap space, and then you could have Marcus Smart and Jordan Goodwin. But I could see where if that's a second round pick, we could look back and say they should have done it. If that's a first round pick, I think it's defensible for them not to. Where do you think that actually fell?
I heard different things on that. It was at over a second, and that was ultimately, I mean, in general, the Lakers have been reluctant to attach assets to dump contracts. That's been a trend, especially since the Russ trade, where they have not really wanted to trade their way out of difficult situations. And you could look at that one of two ways, right? Like there is the argument of with the Russ situation, they let his value, you know, they let the contract run out a bit and his value increased. With D'Lo, they let his contract run out a bit, his value increased. So there is some argument to wait it out, but then there's also the argument of if you can build the team in the summer, you can go into a training camp preseason, have that continuity. And at some point, you're going to have to trade your way out of this mistake. So, like, I look at last year with how they handled the Cam Reddish and Christian Wood contracts, and knowing, like, they had a shot. They were in the running to get Gary Trent Jr. if they could have created a roster spot. Instead, they stood pat with those guys, didn't waive Christian Wood, didn't waive Cam Reddish. They just waited to do it in the regular season, and it ended up allowing Jordan Goodwin ultimately to make the roster. But you didn't know that at the time, right? Like, he was not with them at the beginning of the season. I mean, he was playing with South Bay and stuff, but it would have helped to have Gary Trent on last year's roster, especially at the expense of a Cam Reddish or a Christian Wood. So they've mismanaged these situations before, but I did hear that they were looking into potentially trying to trade the second, attach it, and that was not enough. Teams wanted more. So, of course, if you float a first, teams will you know, bite at that.
Yeah.
But I think that's where them giving up so many seconds in the DFS trade ultimately hurt them, because if they had maybe a couple seconds, that they probably could have gotten off one of those.
Mm. And certainly he looks like a player right now that's worth a couple of seconds. But in that case, it is a bit more defensible, because I can understand, hey, you can't give up a first just in order to keep Jordan Goodwin, but it's unfortunate. It is maybe the accumulation.
I mean, you could have tried to trade Dalton. Scripts. I mean, that's the other path here.
Would that have got them there? Because I think every fan
right now is hard to believe that they were incapable of making room for Jordan Goodwin. I think that that's carrying water for the front office. If that's,
I agree.
Yeah.
So there were paths in order to get that done, and obviously, yes, hindsight being what it is, but still, that's, yeah, probably should have. It's easy to look at it and say, well, you could. It's okay because you turned Jordan Goodwin into Marcus Smart, and that's a defensible decision. But that's not really the move that moves you forward. What moves you forward is having Jordan Goodwin and Marcus Smart and getting the path to that. All right, let's go here. Thanks for the show. Started on Substack. Started a Substack inspired by you guys. Well, thank you. We appreciate that. Awesome. Would you trade for DeRozan if it's Maxey, Gabe, Dalton, and no picks? Let's start there before we get into the other part. I don't have DeRozan as a guy who makes sense for the Lakers. He's only $10 million on the books for next year, though, is guaranteed. You would have to waive him to only pay him $10 million. But Jason, any world where you see DeMar DeRozan being a guy that would help the Lakers move towards the type of team they need to become?
Not a huge fan. I mean, even when we talked about Malik Monk, it was like, yeah, if you could put him on the team without spending anything. Right. The big thing with Malik is he's just an elite three-point shooter, which is why you look at him as a value add there. But DeRozan, I don't think, solves any need for the Lakers.
Yeah.
Agreed. I just think the ideal use for him would be off of the bench in a bench score role, which I think he could be valuable in. But when we talk about acquiring these offensive-minded players, that there's got to be the context of, I don't think he fits with LeBron, Luka, and Austin. So you just have a limitation there in terms of his potential role.
They don't have the assets at this point to get distracted by anything other than defensive, athletic, mid-20s. Hard to find these guys, but everything that we've been talking about, right? You have to be laser focused on acquiring that specific type of player. And even though DeMar DeRozan could do some things, even though Malik Monk could do some things, some of these other guys that we talk about, they could help you. You have to be focused on that specific skill set, finding that, and you cannot get distracted by just about anything else. And then the second part of this, who says no? Luke Kennard for Gabe, a second and a 2030 swap. And I believe Kennard isn't expiring.
I don't hate the idea of getting a shooter.
Yeah.
I think the Lakers might say no, just at giving up a swap for this.
Mm-hmm. Right. If it was Gabe,
I think they would do Gabe in a second.
Right.
Yeah, Kennard, $11 million expiring. I mean, I would do Gabe in a second for Kennard.
Yeah. I think I would. I don't know. I don't know the Kennard. Oh no. I don't know that Kennard moves the needle a ton for you because then you still kind of run into the defensive concerns. But this comment, Gabe Vincent is the guard version of Kwame Brown.
Oh man. Oh man.
I don't know how to take that. LeBron is a Cleveland Cavalier next season. He could be, but I mean, the Cavs, like their move that they made, get it. By the way, I thought it was a great move for the Cavs. I don't know exactly what the Kings were thinking with that, but
they're thinking that, DeAndre Hunter's a hooper.
That's what they were thinking. Trevor? They love DeAndre Hunter. No. First round pick is what we need for Keon Ellis, and we're going to move a bad contract. Instead, you're trading the guy that you just signed 6 months ago in Dennis Schroeder that you just thought was this great deal. You're trading, you're using Keon Ellis as the incentive to get off of Schroeder's contract when he's only guaranteed $4 million. But anyway, I've already ranted and raved about how stupid that trade was for the Kings. But but the Cavs with that trade, the one downside is they did not really open up any future flexibility, assuming they keep Keon Ellis. So right now, unless they're going to move off of a Darius Garland, maybe they move off of Max Strus, and there could be more moves coming to the Cavs, but they'd be looking at signing LeBron for a veteran minimum. Do you guys think LeBron will sign for that little someplace?
I don't think it's off the table, but I think it's more likely that he retires than signs for a veteran minimum.
Yeah, yep. I agree.
All right, let's do a couple more here. Use your first to trade Vando before the deadline to have supreme optionality. Could that build us a contender? I'm assuming this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek here. Just that way you would clear Vando's what 11-ish million off the books next year. So now you're talking about like, well, you'd have an open roster spot charge, but still you'd be looking at like 65 million in cap space, but you wouldn't have your first round pick. Obviously they're not going to do that. They're not going to attach a first just to move them.
Well, now you wouldn't have your three first round picks for 16 hours. That's not supreme optionality.
No, right. You need that window. You need that window to trade your first. Are Sean Marks and Rob in a Brooklyn coffee shop right now? I don't know. Are we getting the Nick Claxton audition game tomorrow night?
You know, I need to go boots on the ground in Brooklyn right now. I'm about a 30 minute Uber away. I should go check out all the coffee shops.
Yep.
Oh yeah, dude.
And snap a historic photo there. Seems like there's more of a chance now that the Lakers don't make a move at the deadline, which is very underwhelming. It does seem like there's been a lot more pessimism about the Lakers actually doing something at the deadline. And Jovan, I'm with you. I'm very concerned that they do nothing at the deadline and about how much pressure that puts on them to get everything right and build out a full roster in one summer.
Well, and it's pressure. It's outside pressure, right? Because I don't know how much internal pressure there actually is.
Sure.
That remains to be seen. Right?
It's all vibes internally.
I think the fan base is ready to crash out. I know that. they are ready.
That is for sure. That's for sure. Although that's kind of, we stay right there most of the time. Don't we? The Lakers lose. The sky is falling. They win.
We live a life of high blood pressure. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
They also haven't made a trade in four of the five last trade cycles. So I get it.
Yeah, I understand it. Lakers best bet is to build around Luka and AR. I do think that's essentially the plan. Agreed. Whether LeBron is part of that or not, I believe that's the plan.
100%.
Trade Gabe and Maxi for DeMar DeRozan. We already talked about DeMar, so I won't go back into that. If the Lakers kept DFS, the defense would be better. Have you seen DFS this season? Because the Rockets haven't, at least not much.
Is it more of an indictment of Rob that DFS was so important to the Lakers last year?
Maybe.
Like maybe. The dinosaur 3-and-D wing was like literally the most valuable player on the team.
Oh no. Real Mad said Andrew Wiggins and Goga and Svi, our old friend Svi. Orlando has Goga out of the rotation. Will be second apron. Dean Wade instead of Svi, maybe. Okay.
I still think the Lakers should be sniffing around Wiggins nonstop if there's a Giannis deal that gets done.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't know how you. I don't think they have the assets to pull this off.
To get all three, yeah.
Yeah, to get all three. They could get each player individually.
Dalton, Gabe, Maxey, and a swap for Wiggins. I don't think that's enough. The math's not enough on that because Wiggins is close to $30 million. I think he's at like 28 this year. But value wise too, I don't think that's going to be enough.
I do wonder if maybe a swap and a second could potentially be enough for Wiggins in a universe where he gets moved.
I think I've landed on if Rui's involved, the first can't be. If the first is involved, Rui can't be.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
That's where I've landed with Wiggins. And then last one we've got, I find it ironic that a front office that complains that offseason trade prices are crazy are putting all their baskets on the offseason. Well, look, any team that is buying complains about the prices. Any team that is selling complains about the offers. So it's not just like the Lakers complain about price. But yes, I do not think it's an ideal situation to go into the offseason with all your eggs in that basket and try to build everything out in one summer. I don't want to hear, you know, we kept the powder dry again and we'll make more moves at the trade deadline next year. I think you need to exit this summer. Whether that means you make moves here at this trade deadline and then the summer or just the summer, you need to exit next summer ready to roll finally.
Agreed.
All right, guys.
Great show.
Good show. We appreciate everybody for joining us. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button. Jason, Jovan, thank you guys. It's always a blast talking hoops with you guys. And Jovan, best of luck searching for Rob Pelinka.
Thank you. I saw we did miss one super chat here quickly from Nala. It says, would you consider taking Poole's contract if it allowed us to land Herb and get off Vando? Would you eat $37 million out of 55 in summer cap space, but we'd have $50+ million expiring next year?
I think Poole and Austin are a little redundant.
But you're getting Herb and you're getting off Vando. So I assume it's some...
You have to send out a ton of salary then, don't you?
I mean, Herb's only at, what, $14 million?
Yeah, I think you get close with Rui and Vando. You could do like Rui, Vando, Dalton, and a first, something like that for Herb and Poole, I think.
You need 40. You need 45 million, 46 million. It looks like.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
I really like Herb, so I'd be open to it, and I like getting off of Vando's contract.
And Poole is a $34 million expiring. You could maybe try to turn that into something next season.
So New Orleans is getting a first round pick, and Rui Hachimura is the two assets in the deal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I guess you're technically bailing them out of the Jordan Poole contract, but they have to pay Vando.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess the they're getting the two assets, but then Vando sort of, you could, I think right now you'd have to attach a first to get off Vando, so that almost cancels each other out to a degree.
Yeah, Vando's got a player option 2 years from now for $13 million. That's tough.
So I don't know that I think the honest answer is the Pels probably don't do this, especially if they're wanting a Desmond Bane package for Herb Jones, which I think is crazy, but then they're not going to do this. But should the Lakers do it?
I think just a thought exercise. Let's say they're like, include a Duthiero and the second round pick too. Would you do it? So basically every remaining asset for the Lakers for Herb Jones and getting off Vando.
It helps getting off of Vando's contract. Does this, like, do you feel like you're ready to go contend if you have that?
If you move the first round pick this summer for a center, all of a sudden you've got Luka, Austin, LeBron, Herb Jones, and a center. That's a hell of a lot closer than they are right now.
You know what I'm doing? I'm seeing if you can finagle Eve Misi into that somehow or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, though.
That would push it over the edge there. It is an interesting idea. And I
do wonder if we're just going to be talking about optionality on our Friday show, though.
Oh, yeah. So what the plan is for everybody, if they do something big or notable, then we'll go live on Thursday. Yeah. If not, we'll go live on Friday. I guess what qualifies? Where's the line here? Is like, I think Dalton connected in a second. I think it has to be like Rui or the first or a really notable name for it to qualify for a Thursday show. I think
if they move for a bench player, we'll go on Friday morning.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
All right.
See,
poster King. See
you
all Friday.
Friday.
All Friday. See you guys.
All right.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you very much for joining us here. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button. Till next time. See you and stay safe.